Today's daf, Masechet Erevin, brought to you from Yerushalayim Yir HaKodesh, is daf Samach Aleph, and we are holding at the bottom, I think we got over to the top. But let's just review again what was happening over here. Rav Idi, who is the one who quotes Rav Yeshua ben Levi, that it all depends on where your tum ends. If your tum ends when you're counting from outside, your tum ends in the middle of a city, so then you got to stop where you got to. But if your tum ends at the end of a city, then the entire city automatically becomes part of your tum, counts just as four amas, and then you continue walking on as if the city wasn't there. So Rav Idi commented that, I don't know like where this comes from, but because it's like completely new and it's like divrei nevi'ahs. So it must be some kind of Kabbalah that he had. And Rav Atainet, that not only is it not new, but it's like beferish in the Mishnah, that it's coming up. And if anything, it's problematic as to why Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi had to say something that was obvious from the Mishnah. I mean, well, what's even the point of Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi? So he said that the Mishnah, and this is the Mishnah we're going to be having today, that Anshe Ir Gedola, Mahalchit is called Ir Kitana, but Ein Anshe Ir Kitana, Mahalchit is called Ir Gedola, how could that be? I mean, why would we be prejudiced against the people that live in a smaller town? You know, obviously, it must be. The only way to understand it is that the Anshe Ir Kitana, when they start walking, they end up not being able to get all the way to the end of this big, gigantic city that's next to them. They have to stop wherever they are. Mashenkein, the Ir Gedola, their tum subsumes the tum of the little town. And because of that, they aren't allowed to. So there you go. You basically have both dinim of Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi. Namely, A, if it ends in the middle of an enclosed place, you do not get the enclosed place if you're being meided from outside. And B, if it ends in a way that subsumes the enclosed place, then the enclosed place becomes the equivalent of Arba Amos. I don't understand what Rav Dimi is saying, that this is Divrei Nevi'ahs. I mean, this is very, very clear. I don't even understand, like, why we need to even mention it for B'chol. So it must be, so let's get on to the second line over here, Lav Mishum, I mean, isn't that obviously because of the fact that the large city, is the small city, is called Amidatam B'chatziyahir, whereas the large city, and the little town itself, it may only be like 500 amas, you know, and when they start measuring their tum, it completely subsumes the small town. So there you go, and you got the entire halacha right there and then. So, I mean, like, why did Rav Idi actually say that these are Divrei Nevi'ahs? I mean, clearly he learned the Mishnah. I mean, there is no other way to read the Mishnah, is there? Well, there is, if you have a different gears in the Mishnah. Turns out that Rav Idi had a different gears in the Mishnah, which read that Anshe Yir HaGdola Mahalchin and Anshe Yir HaKtana Mahalchin. Exact opposite. Not Ein Anshe, but Anshe. So, in other words, the two were parallel to each other, according to which the halacha actually is a contradiction to Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi that he quoted. It's certainly not a riot to him. And the way that he makes it works out, even according to what Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi is, he says what's talking about over here, Mukim la benotein, that if he put his Erev in the other town, okay, so then putting the Erev in that town makes the Mokum ha-Erev your Mokum Shvisa. So then it means that you basically own a house, so to speak, in the other town. I mean, it's a formal house that's your Erev, but that gives you the right to view that town as your place. And because of that, you can walk outside of the town for 2,000 amas. But if you were talking about a case where you're being modate, meaning you're coming from outside of the town and you're counting the number of steps till the end of your tum, then of course you could not. And that was what Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi was talking about, was the case of modate. So I understand. And according to Rav Idi, it isn't said in the Mishnah. How can you say it isn't said in the Mishnah? You're pretending that you didn't read to the end of the Mishnah. Thank you very much. You explained the first part of the Mishnah. The Mishnah continues on, and it says, Vatanan, Ulamodeid, but somebody who's measuring his own tchum coming from the outside, there, when they said, Shamru notim lo alpayim mama, they mean exactly what they said. Alpayim mama, bango. And if it stops in the middle of this big cave, which is another 10,000 amas long, I don't give a hang. You stop right where you are. If it stops in the middle of the city, makes no difference. You got to stop exactly where you got to in the city. So what's Rav Idi saying? I understand it's not in the Mishnah. It is in the Mishnah. It's just in the last part of the Mishnah, right? Says the Gemara, you're right, and he wasn't referring to that part. He's referring, actually, to the part about Sofair. Now, it doesn't say anything in the Mishnah over here about what happens if you do subsume the city. It only says what happens if you don't subsume the city, that you have to stop. Okay, so Rav Edi was saying, even though where it does not subsume the city, you have to stop. There's this big Kiddush, which sounds like the Vernon Vias. If it does subsume the city, then the entire city is magically transformed into an area of Arba Amos. Does that say anywhere in the Mishnah that? No, not the way that I was garrisoned in the Mishnah, Anche Anche, right? So because of that, it was certainly necessary for Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi to say what he said. And I think I'm totally within my rights to say, gosh, where did he get that from? En elo ela divrei neviut. Om Rav Nachman, let me tell you something. This Mishnah makes perfectly good sense no matter how you read it. You want to read it the way that Rav Edi just read it, and that it says Anche Anche, meaning the people of the small town can walk through the big town. People of the big town can walk through the small town. That makes perfectly good sense, as I'll explain, and what we just explained. And the one who has the girsa that we originally had, that but ain anche, the cities of the small town cannot walk across the large town, that also makes sense. It's very simple. The one who says, Rivi'idi, anche, anche, they both can walk. So, okay, so he explains that as Rivi'idi did, that it's talking about you put your Erev in that town. By putting that Erev in the town, you become a resident of the town. And because of that, your tum begins at the end of the town. If your girsa, your girsa is Rava's girsa, which was the way we thought it was. So if it says, V'ein anche ha'irakhtana, they're not allowed to go through the entire Ir HaGdola, makes also perfectly good sense. He's talking about the case in the Mishnah where you did not put your Erev in that town and you're just counting your tum from outside of the town. And then the way that you would have to fix the Mishnah, because the end of the Mishnah does talk about the case of where you need to stop. So according to him, it's Chisuri Mechas or Vachiktani. We'd have to say it like this. Anche Ir Gedola, Malchin et Kol Ir Ktana. But in Anche Ir Ktana, Malchin et Kol Ir Gedola. Fine. That's the girsa we had, according to Rava. Now, you have to put in the words. This is only true if you are counting your tum from outside of the city and you didn't put your Erev in the city. Then whatever the town is that you put your Erev into becomes your Mokum Shvisa, and therefore the entire city acts as your Mokum Shvisa, as if your Erev was an actual home that you owned in that city. Omri of Yosef, Omri of Barava, Omri of Huna. Let me tell you something else. We're on the topic of DACA over here, as we pointed out this morning, and that that DACA is a new idea. And the truth is, it extends further than what we thought. And we thought the only idea of a DACA is that it's a kind of weird mechitza that's not quite a mechitza, but it's good enough to be misalik yourself from a particular makom, right? We're going to use the word daka in a completely different way, where it's much more the word itself. Daka means thin, right? So it's very thin. And what we're going to use it as, interestingly enough, is fencing. Now, fencing is very thin. So it's not the normal way to make a gedera, right? And what Rav Yosef says over here, the name of Rami Bar Ava and Rav Huna, is that if you have a town that is located right at the edge of a nachal, now that nachal could be either water that's dangerous and kids could drown in it, or it's a cliff that you could fall off of, as we're going to see in the case in the Gemara. Then if they built a fence around a dangerous area, and we call that a daka in a different sense. It's not a normal mechitza where it's not like just, you know, something that you look through. But over here, a daka, it has to be four. Now, four, it's going to turn out, is not arba'ah. Four is arba. So we're not talking about the normal daka, which is for tfachim. That daka was used as a formalized siluk of your desire to be part of the other rishos. This is a guardrail, essentially. Fencing that is protective fencing. And the problem is like this. If a town is dangerous. People are not going to let their kids out of the house. Nobody's going to let the kids run around town if they could fall into a public pool and drown. And then there's no lifeguards. Nobody's going to let their kids run around a town where they could fall off the edge of a cliff and never be heard from again. It's ridiculous. So a city like that is not a city. It's simply not Miyushav. As far as we're concerned, the way Rashi puts it, as far as we're concerned, they are Yoshvei Tzrifim. They're like Yoshvei Kvarim. Who lives like that? No normal human being lives like that. So if they put up fencing, it's true that that's not normally the way you, but look, fencing is enough to deal with this problem, okay? So if they put up a fence, fine. Im yesh lefanel daka arba, we'll see it should say, and that goes the entire length that people are going to be exposed to this, either swimming pool, ravine, or whatever it is. So then they get the same thing as everybody else. You count from the edge of the town, which in this case is the fencing. And if not, forget it. They don't even have a din of a town. And ein modedin l'adam mipetach beito. Everybody is living in a tzrif. You might as well be living in a little tent in the middle of nowhere. I don't care how many other houses there are around. They don't count towards a city. So Abaye said to Rav Yosef, it's a little bit strange. Normally, you always used to be talking about a daka of four tvachim. And over here, you kept insisting that the correct girsa is daka arba. Arba is feminine, and it's a reference to amot and not to tvachim. So how come maishna b'kol daka di alma, but normally you always define it as four tvachim. And over here, you claim that it's arba amot amart lanala. Omar Lai said, yes, what does one have to do with the other, for God's sake? I'm just calling it a daka. I mean, the cases before, it's there to make a point. The point is, I see myself as being disconnected from that area. That's the only point. Over here, we're talking about protection. This area is scary, man. I mean, what you need to do over there is make the parents feel secure. So you notice that I'm even telling you, you can't use a normal machitza. Normal machitza is 10 tvachim. You should have shouted at me. Whoever heard of a machitza of arba amos? There's no such thing. The din of a machitza is always 10 tvachim. The idea of a daka adds even 4 tvachim because it's just a formalized machitza, right? So I'm explaining to you. Because if you're talking about something which is just fencing, so it's essentially a guardrail. A guardrail does not make people feel secure unless it's really enough to prevent the kids from crawling over or getting under. And because of that, I'm insisting on a full chain link fence that's 4 amas high. That's like a very serious fence. We're talking about a 6-foot high fence. And that allows the town to be considered to be a normal town. And Rav Yosef says, look, I know this sounds like a very liberal approach, you know, but it's based on an actual maysa. I'll tell you what the maysa is and where I learned it from. And once again, we bring ourselves back. We were already in this location in Eretz Yisrael, which is that wild road that goes down from the top of the Golan down towards Chamsan, Chamat Gader. And it's an absolutely crazy road, in which one wrong turn on one of those twists and you go flying for like a kilometer down the hill and there is no stopping. Okay, so there were two cities that were built there. One of them was built all the way on the top, and that was Gader. And one of them was built halfway down, and that was called Chamsan. And the idea over there was that Rebbe paskened that the people from Gader are allowed to go to Chamtan. But the people from Chamtan are not allowed to go together. Now, does this make sense to you? It's ridiculous. So how could there be such a psak? Unless, I mean, I understand that the issue was that the people in Gedder had actually put up a fence at the edge of the cliff. So because of that, we view their town as being a real town. But the people in Chamtan, they didn't bother putting up a fence. So if they didn't bother putting up a fence, we do not view them as a town. And they don't have a tchum that starts at the end of the town because there is no town. So over there, everybody's got a measure from wherever their house is. So because of that, Rebbe said, look, just because you live in Chamtan doesn't mean that you can carry to Gader just because Gader is allowed to carry to you. Because your tchum depending obviously on where you live in Kamptan, but your term could well begin outside of the 2,000 Amas that would allow you to go wherever you want in Gadir, would stop in the middle of Gadir. You guys don't know the difference, stop in the middle, where it stops, and so on. So he simply answered them for going to Kamptan completely. I mean, that's the only way I understand it. The point was over there that that was the reality. The people in Gadir had a fence, and the people in Kamptan did not have a fence, and apparently Rebbe based his Psak Halacha on the fact that without a fence, you don't have a town. Well, anyway, if you don't know the facts, then this is a very nice raya, okay? But as usual, there's always the data that is hidden, right? And it was not available to Rav Yosef. So what happened was that when Rav Dimi came, and he came from Eretz Yisrael, and he happened to know the area, and he knew exactly what was going on, and he said, look, you know, it sounds like it makes sense, okay? But let me tell you what really happened, right? What really happened is that the people in Gadir were actually very rough and rowdy people. It was the Wild West, okay? So they used to attack these poor people in Kamptan, who were basically a bunch of nerds there. That was like Nerd City. And anybody that came from Kamptan to Gadir would get beaten up. So Rebbe said, no going from Kamptan to Gadir. But he just put that into effect as an act of protecting them. It had nothing to do with all of this fancy logic. I mean, it really looks good, Rav Yosef, but it had nothing to do with the facts. So these guys were like really juvenile delinquents. I mean, Tatrugi mitatrugelu b'nei Gadir l'vnei Kamptan. You saw always attack these people. So even though it says Rebbe was matir, doesn't mean Rebbe was matir. He was mitakein is what it really means. And it had nothing to do with the Tchum. He may pretend that it had, you know, in reality, it was not a din in Shabbos. It was a din in self-protection. Understand? What do you mean? It's a din in self-protection. And he made it dependent on Shabbos and the Tchum. He didn't say people from Kamptan can never go to Gadir. So what's the difference if it's Shabbat or not on Shabbat? The difference, my friend, the difference is alcohol, baby. That's the difference. On Shabbat, people get high. And when the people in Kamptan got high on Shabbat, they went around beating people up. So they went a little bit cuckoo there, okay? When and therefore, the Kamptan, he pretended it was a din in Shabbat because he was simply being practical and there was no alcohol during the week. So again, you know, if you look at this from far away, from outer space, I mean, yes, you can say it's because of the Gadir and there's two different din of Tchumim, but when you get the facts, things look very, very different when you're out there, the uvdot bashetach. And so, ma'ishna Shabbat, teshlicha bashichrut, because people would get high and they would get wild. Wait a minute. Hold on a second. So, if they're those kind of people, so how did Rebbe allow people from Gadir to go to Kamptan if we're worried that they beat up people in Kamptan? So, even when they go to Kamptan, then we shouldn't allow them to go to Kamptan. Ah, come on. You know what they say in Spanish. A kalba below mate, shef shnin lo nobach. The moment the doggy is out of his own yard, he loses his bark for 7 years. You know, it's all very nice to bark when you're in your yard, you know. And you're really feeling your oats. But the moment they take you out of there, that's why the people come from Gadir to Kamptan. You really think they're going to attack the people in Kamptan because they're so high and mighty? So that he didn't think was a problem. Wait a minute. But then if that's the case, I mean, the norm is, if that's the case, if people from Kamptan found somebody from Gadir in town, they'd beat him up. I mean, it's time for a little bit of revenge. These guys have been beating us up for years. This idiot wanted to risk his life and come to Ramallah? Let's beat him up. So why did Rebbe allow people from Gadir to come to Kamptan and not be mitakein that they have to protect their own lives and not go to Kamptan? How do you explain that? So Ashtanami mitatrugei b'nei Kamptan levnei Gadir. No. The fact that you lose your bark doesn't mean that you become a nebuchal, you know? I mean, if one of these Kamptan nerds were trying to start up with them, believe me, they'd protect themselves very well. Nobody in Kamptan's going to start up with one of these redneck Gadirniks. So because of that, it's not really a problem. So Gadir can come to Kamptan, but Kamptan can go to Gadir. Boy, what you don't find in Erevin, right? All right, fine. Anyway, Rav Safra says, I mean, there are other explanations that are not necessarily sociological, you know. There's other very simple explanations that have to do with the Tchumim. Hey, don't you remember a case or two where one city can go one place, one city can't go to another place? We just had a Mishnah. So what's the problem? I'll tell you the story. The story is that Chamtan was actually made in the shape of a keshet. So it was a big city. It had 4,000, more than 4,000 amos between the two long ends of the keshet. And, of course, I mean, this, as Rashi explains, was a paid political announcement because there was absolutely no reason to have to say we're talking about a city that's shaped like a keshet. It could just simply be a bigger city. But okay, so it was a paid political announcement because it really Rav Safra wanted to stick in that, and of course, Rebbe Paskin like Rav Huna, that when there's more than 4,000 amos between the bottom two sides, that then you have to start measuring the Tchum from the Keshet, and you can't measure it from the Yeter. So how was he going to get in that paid political announcement? So he said, yeah, so that's what this was. It was a city that was shaped like a Keshet, and because of that, it turned out that it would be really, essentially, that Geder was a big town, Chamtan was smaller. And so because of that, you ended up that the entire town of Chamtan was within the Tchum of Geder. But Geder, since you had to start all the way at the Keshet, you didn't necessarily get to the end of Geder. And that would be enough of a reason. I understand why you have to get into this shtick about building fences and everything. You know, children are highly overrated. So if they let the kids out, you know, I guess. Okay. Anyway, Rav Kahana says, it all makes a great deal of sense to me without the political announcements, okay? So this Rav Kahana said the political announcements, it's fine. The way we just said it, Rav Tavuni, he said it a little differently, and he wasn't sure who said what. So what he said, sorry, I skipped. I meant Rav Dimi Bar Chinina. So Rav Dimi Bar Chinina says, cut the political announcement. It's simply the difference between an Ir Gedola, an Ir Ktana, and it's an example of our Mishnah. That's how Rav Kahana has it. Rav Tavyumi has it a little bit differently because of the fact that he didn't know who said what. So he puts it like this, that there were two pshatim. There was Rav Safra's pshat and Rav Dimi Bar Chinina's pshat. So he agrees with the Gemara before, but he doesn't know who said what. So he said, Chad Amar Ir HaSuya Kikeshet Avi. And that's why the people from Chamtan, not necessarily, depending on where they lived along the Keshet, so they not necessarily could get through Gader. Masha Enkein, the other one said, what do you have to do? It's nothing to do with that. One was an Ir Ktana, and one was an Ir Gedola. Now, that means that our Mishnah here has opened up a fascinating sugya. The fascinating sugya is the presence of an Erev in a different city. Remember that the Mishnah had begun by talking about the presence of the Erev in the Iburo Shel Ir, the presence of the Erev outside of the Iburo Shel Ir, and the presence of the Erev outside of the Tchum, which the Gemara brought up, just pointing out that it's ridiculous because it wouldn't be an Erev at all. However, what we did not really talk about the Farish in that Mishnah and was introduced now only in the Sugya of the Ir Ktana and Ir Gedola was what if you put your Erev in a different city? So we started taking for granted over here that since we could explain the Mishnah as talking about that if the people in the small town had actually put an Erev in the large town, so then they become residents for legal purposes vis-a-vis Shabbat in the large town, and now they can carry from the Tchum of the large town. Now the question is that really true? And it turns out that there's a big machloket about whether simply putting down an Erev actually is kena shvisa to be considered, to be considered a member of the town. Now, remember that until now, we've been sort of lackadaisical in the sense that the machlokas that we had earlier, what is the essential Erev? Is the essential Erev voting with your feet? Or is the essential Erev putting down food, right? So if the essential Erev is using your feet to be in a place, the food is only an extension in order to be makel for a shirim. So we weren't quite sure. Remember, we raised the issue. If you put down an Erev, does it also give you four amos where you put down the Erev? Or is that only if you're actually in the place, because then you have your personal space of 4 hours. Now, we weren't able to define that earlier. We didn't have clear raya, right? We talked about, is it a kula, is it a chumra? We said, but it doesn't register in terms of kula v'chumra for the usher. I mean, the 4 amas is not worth walking out for 3 hours Erev Shabbos and taking this walk out 2 kilometers back. And I don't have time for that. Fine. But there may be other differences. The other differences may be that in the same way that you understand that a formal kinyan of an Erev may not give you the 4 amas of your own personal space, it also may not give you a home to be considered to be a member of the other city. Now, maybe walking there and actually being there at the beginning of Shabbos would give you a Mokum Shvisa in that other town. Maybe not, but there would be 3 dargas. Really having a home in the other town, a Shabbos home, having a home that's a formal home that's created by your walking there and actually being present in the city, Erev Shabbos, and then utilizing the additional kula of an Erev that you could put down just by putting down food and claiming that that itself also gives you a home in the other city, right? So there's 3 possibilities. Now, it turns out that it is not at all clear what the din is in all of these possibilities. That is, at what point do you literally claim a home in another town just by putting an Erev there, going there with your feet, owning a house there? What is actually necessary in order to be kena your tchum in a different town? So the way that we explained it until now, the way that Rav Edi was explaining the previous Mishnah, Rav Edi was saying that it's enough to put an Erev. You put an Erev, so then you remember the other town. That's what he said. And now, turns out that not everybody agrees to all of that. So let's get to our Mishnah that we've been referring to the whole time with Rav Edi and the 2 Girsos and the Mishnah and so on. We're going to have the Gnusach in the Mishnah that Rav Edi had, namely that Anshe Ir Gedola can be Mahalech Kol Ir Ketana. Anshe Ir Ketana are also Mahalchen Kol Ir Gedola, but not always. Ketzad, if you lived in an Ir Gedola and you put your Erev down in the Ir Ketana, or you lived in the Ir Ketana and you put your Erev down in the Ir Gedola, so then there's nothing to discuss. We don't measure how far away you are from your home. Oh my gosh, we missed our crucial introduction by our capitan. Good heavens.
We missed.
All right. Everything I was saying was only an introduction to the introduction. Fine. So now, if we're going to be going according to the Girsa of Rav Edi, so then he has to explain, of course, what is this talking about? It's talking about if you actually put your Erev in the Ir Gedola. So then, even though you live far away in the Ir Ketana, you can walk through that entire city because it says if you actually live there. And Mahalechet Kula, V'chutzala, Alpayim Ama, everything is hunky-dory. Rabbi Akiva says, no. You can't be kona a house by putting down an Erev. It's just a formal Erev. The fact that it happens to be in town, that doesn't mean the town is yours. You have to count your tum from where your Erev is. And Elo, Ela Mimkom Eruvo, Alpayim Ama, and there's a tremendous difference between being in a place and putting down a formal Erev in the place. So as we'll see, Rabbi Akiva does agree in the end that if you're actually in the place and you were kena shvisa by being there, then indeed he's maida. Yes, in that case, you can walk 2,000 amas from the edge of the city, but not by putting down an Erev. Amar Lam Rabbi Akiva said to the Tadakama, to Rabbona, listen, guys, aren't you maida to me? Now, he knew they were maida, which is why he said this. Yata modimli, do you not admit that in a case where somebody puts an Erev in a cave, that you do not get the rights to the entire cave. You get a right to 2,000 amas from the placement of your Erev. If the cave is 2 kilometers long, you don't start carrying after you walk the whole length of the cave of 2 kilometers. So aren't you moda to that? Omrulo, yes and no. Because that's true only in one situation. Where is that true? We know where that's true. The makom that you have for your Erev has to be a makom that is hukah fladira, right? Otherwise, it has to be pachas mibeit satayim. That's one of the dinim. So you do get, it isn't really true, you would get the entire cave if the cave was populated. So if this cave was a place where people are living, why wouldn't you get the entire cave? So it's not true what you're saying. You're comparing a cave which is not populated to a city which is populated. The city is populated. So then what's my problem of getting the entire rights to the city by putting an Erev down there? I don't think you could prove one from the other at all. So there's a big difference. This is only where there are no diurin, and therefore your Erev does not make an amokam of diurin. But if there were actually yeshba diurin, so then we actually disagree with you. Absolutely. You can walk the entire cave. It counts as four amas. Doesn't count even as four amas, actually. You start your tchum at the end of the cave. That's where you start counting. So your malach is kula, and then you're a mahalach chutzala paim amah. Which would mean that basically, if this cave was like underneath an uninhabited mountain, let's say, right? So then there would be a tremendous difference depending on whether you put the Erev on top of the mountain or you put the Erev inside the mountain in the cave. Because nimtza kal tocha mi'al gaba. So in other words, if you put your Erev inside the cave, as long as there's people in the cave, so then you could start walking maybe an additional 3 or 4 kilometers further than if you put your Erev on top of the mountain, where over there you're stuck with walking directly from the Erev. So we said that if somebody is counting, says the Mishnah, that over there, the Modecha Amru, if you're counting from outside, now remember, so we basically have 4 different possibilities. You could be counting from the outside because your tchum was completely outside at an Erev somewhere in a field, and now you're counting from there into the city. Okay, so over there we said subsuming the city turns it into 4 amas. Not subsuming the city means you stop exactly where you get to. You can't walk a step further. Then we add the question of what if you put the Erev in the city? Machlokas Rabbi Akiva and the Rabbanan. Then we add the question of what happens if you actually are present in the city. So far, it would appear that Rabbi Akiva and the Rabbanan would agree that that's sufficient. You wouldn't actually need to have a town in the other city. Let's see whether everybody agrees even to that. So in the case where a guy is being modate from outside and he's coming into the cave, so in that case, no matter where your tum ends, the moment you get to your count of 2,000, you must stop. So over there, afilu sof midato kolo b'mara, that's all that you have. If it would have brought you all the way to the end of the cave, or would have brought you all the way to the end of the city, that was the chiddush of Rabbi Yehuda ben Levi that we said before. And that Yeshua ben Levi that we said before, the Ravidi himself had quoted that he said was Divrei Nevi'ahs. But I mean, that is a different situation, which indeed the Mishnah doesn't talk about. And because of that, we said that's precisely why we need to talk about that case. Okay, so now, what would be the din? According to the Tanna Kamma, they say if you put the Erev down, you get a house, so to speak. Omer Rav Yehuda Omer Shmuel. How about, remember that the Chachomim say, yeah, but if there was nobody living there, so then it doesn't count, right? We agree with Rabbi Akiva, nobody lives there. Let me ask you something. How about a ghost town? So a ghost town is defined as a town. It doesn't have any inhabitants, but it was certainly Mukav Ladira, right? When we conclude the ghost town in the actual Ibur of the year. So you went ahead and you start your Shabbos. Now note how it's said, you didn't put an Erev there. You actually were there. So you started your Shabbos off in a ghost town. So Shmuel Tainas, according to the Rabbanan, you can walk through the entire ghost town and outside the ghost town, 2,000 amas. Now, this is very misleading because this is true even according to Rabbi Akiva. Remember, Rabbi Akiva only was talking about if you put an Erev down, you do not get a Malkam Shvisa in the whole town. He agreed that if you're physically present there. So when we say Aliba de Rabbanan, it's not that this statement is Aliba de Rabbanan. It's the next piece that's important to say Aliba de Rabbanan. Okay? He niachet eruvo bi'ir chariva. If, however, you put down an Erev and you weren't actually there, so then you should know, even according to the Rabbanan, they would agree that since nobody lives in that town, even though it was made as a town, because even the Rabbanan agreed that if there's no one there, it's not inhabited, so then it's not considered to be enclosed to give you the entire place, no matter how big it is. Whereas Rabbi Elazar say, I don't think Shmuel is right. I think it doesn't make any difference. Why did he say if you were Shavat in that town? Wouldn't it matter if you were Shavat there, if you put your Erev there? It's the same thing. The entire ghost town is considered to be your place, and then you can walk outside of it 2,000 amas. What? Rabbi Elazar, what are you talking about, man? We just finished reading a Mishnah, okay? The Mishnah has a conversation between Rabbi Akiva and the Chachamim, and you're dumping everybody over here. What's the matter with you? Look what we just learned. Amar Lem Rabbi Akiva, don't you agree that if you put your Erev in the middle of a Mara, that the din is that you don't have the entire Mara? And the Chachamim say, yes, of course, we agree to that. But that's only because nobody lives there. But if somebody lives there, then it's different. Okay, but that means that if nobody lives there, the Rabbanan agree with the Rabbi Akiva, that you do not get it. And you, Rabbi Elazar, are coming along and you're saying, no, in that case, you do have a right, even though you just put your Erev down in a ghost town. Where do you get that from? Says Rabbi Elazar, no, because you don't understand what the words mean. When it said Ein Ba Diorin, it does not mean that there was no one living in the town. That's not the point. The point is that it's Eina Ru'uya L'dira. The idea over here is that it's not the fact whether people are there or not. What defines things, according to Rabbanan, is whether the place is roi for a dira. So if the place isn't roi for a dira because the walls have collapsed, that's where the Rabbanan say, if it's not roi for dira, so then Eina Chinami. It would not be considered to be Mukaf Bechitzas. But he wasn't talking about the physical presence of people. What's the difference if it's people or it's ghosts? It's a perfectly good town. And because of that, it would be just fine. Toshma? Okay. Let's see whether Shmuel, the way Rabbi Yehuda explained it, or Rabbi Elazar's claiming. Okay? Because Rabbi Elazar claims that Rabbi Yehuda misrepresents this whole thing. It makes no difference whether you put the Erev there, and the word Shavat is very misleading. It has nothing to do with Shavat. Okay, let me see. It says over here, in a Braita, Shavat Be'ir. Now, Shavat Be'ir means that you were actually there, not that you put an Erev there, right? So if you were Shavat Be'ir, even it's a gigantic city. It's as large as Antioch, which is like enormous. Or B'mara, let's say you were Shavat B'mara. I don't care how big that Mara is. It could be as big as the Marat Tzidkiyo Melech Yehuda, which was like so big it stretched all the way. It was going to be able to get out of Yerushalayim, come out by the Yam HaMelech. I mean, God, you know, it's miles long. The din is, you can walk through the entire thing. Malach Eskula V'chutzal Paim Ama. Okay? Now, first of all, let's understand what we're talking about. I mean, if we're talking about a city, and we compare the city to a Mara, I mean, so then that means that it's a ghost town. I mean, a Mara is a ghost town. Nobody lived in Mara Tzidkiyo, right? So now you're talking about there was a big town, but nobody's there. And it says over here, Beferish, in the Brise, exactly what Shmuel said according to Rabbi Yehuda, Shavat, and only Shavat. Nothing about Hiniach Eruvo. Shavat means you were actually there. Aval Hiniach, if you just put an Erev there, then you see from here that you would not be able to walk. Now I ask you, who do you think said this, okay? Which, was it Rabbi Akiva or was it the Rabbanan? I mean, even Rabbi Akiva, according to Rabbi Akiva, has nothing to do with it being a choreva. Because according to Rabbi Akiva, even if people were there, it wouldn't make any difference. If I put an Erev there, I wasn't kind of placed there. I need to be physically present, according to Rabbi Akiva. So therefore, can't be true according to Rabbi Akiva. It must be saying that even according to the Rabbanan, the only time that it works that you get the entire town is if you were physically present, which is what the word Shavat means. You actually spent Shabbos there. At the beginning of Shabbos, that's where you were. But if you would have just been Meniach and Erev there, and you were never Shavat there, then the Rabbanan would never have said that you can walk outside of it for 2,000 amas, right? We don't consider this to be an extension of your Arbamas, which shows that Rabbi Elazar is wrong. Says Rabbi Elazar, oh, I guess the only way to read this is that Antioch was a cave, so to speak. In other words, nobody lived in Antioch, you know? Maybe it means the opposite. Maybe it means a big city like Antioch, or a cave the size of, but like Antioch, of course, which is filled with people, okay? So I didn't understand where you come to say it has to mean that direction. Maybe it means the other direction. I say, Ema me'ara dubya de'ir. So just like an ear is yeshiva, people are sitting in it, they're living there. The Mara that we, that's why we put the two together, to compare them to each other. So the same way that the large city that we're referring to is inhabited, so the large cave that we're talking about is inhabited. And Dafkin's going on to Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva says in the Mishnah that even if you put your Erev in a large inhabited city, you do not get the right to a house in that city. And you have to count your Erev from the Mokum of the Trum, from the Mokum of the Erev, not from the Trum. And basically, it's saying that Rabbi Akiva is Maida, that if you were actually present there, so here we finally see this, that according to Rabbi Akiva, he's also Moda, that if you're there, Shavat, he would be Moda, and that you can, even Rabbi Akiva, you can go 2,000 amos from the edge of the cave, or from the edge of Antioch, right? So that means if you put an Erev, it's not considered to be your 4 amos. That's how I understand it. I don't get it. Marat Sitkio inhabited? When was Marat Sitkio ever inhabited? Well, it says like Marat Sitkio. I mean, it doesn't just specify some cave here or there, you know? We happen to know for a fact that it's not an inhabited cave. Oh, come on. It doesn't mean literally Marat Sitkio. You know that. It means big as Kimarat Sitkio. He's not identifying it as Marat Sitkio. Kimarat Sitkio, but not literally Marat Sitkio. Kimarat Sitkio in terms of how big it is. But obviously it's not literally Marat Sitkio. Marat Sitkio nobody lived in. But we're talking about a case of something as big as Marat Sitkio, which was similar to Antioch and therefore did have people in it. Now, Rabbi Yehuda, he found that the people that lived in Mavrachta, they used to put their Erev not in the gas station, but they would put the Erev in the Beit HaKnesset. This Beit HaKnesset was a very big Beit HaKnesset. It was outside of town. It was like 2,000 amos almost away, right? And they would put it in the Beit HaKnesset wherever, because they figured since it's in the Beit HaKnesset, so then the entire Beit HaKnesset has a din of one place, because they were going to leave the Rabbanan. The Rabbanan say that even if you put down your Erev, you don't have to physically be present. Even if you just put down an Erev, so then you get a right to the entire place, right? So they didn't care if they put it in the first room, they put it in the last room. Anyway, so Mar Yehuda said to them, you guys are making a big mistake, because the further away from Mavrachta that you put your Erev, the further away you're going to be able to walk, even though your Erev is in a building. Because the halacha is like Rabbi Akiva, and you don't start counting from the edge, okay? So if you want to get more room to walk, then I would advise you to be goes beitvei, push it in a little bit more. Because the further you pushed it in, the more you're going to be able to be zeiche, because the halacha is like Rabbi Akiva. And Rabbi Akiva says putting an Erev somewhere doesn't give you anything. Omale Rava, what are you making trouble for? Palga, I love these frum guys. They always make machloikasin. That's all you're doing is making machloikasin. It happens to be that when it comes to Erevin, remember we have a klal, that the halacha is always like the mekil and Erevin. So why nobody pays any attention to Rabbi Akiva's chobro over here? I never heard of such a thing. This is their minute to go according to the Chachomim that an Erev is Kena, and you're coming along and saying, no, 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 it's not good enough. Of course not. It's the classic Erev syndrome. Everybody's got an Erev syndrome. The Erev is not good enough for me. So then you're coming along and giving us the classic Erev syndrome. It's not good enough. You have to put your Erev all the way at the end of the shul to the other side. You're doing nothing but causing machlokes. Because be'erevin, less the Chashla, the Rabbi Akiva. There's no one who actually cares about the Schumra of Rabbi Akiva. we paskin like the Divrei HaMeikel, and therefore the halacha is that the entire area is considered to be yours. You were kaina, your makam shvisa, right there and there in the shul.